It's Wednesday, September 18th, and this is Rev Thoughts, Snackable Conversations between Tim Thompson and myself, Joel Pilger. Our topic today is greatness, goal or byproduct.
So greetings from Los Angeles. I'm doing the usual trek of, say, 13 miles to go across town, and it's going to take me 55 minutes.
Yeah, perfect. I was in Los Angeles on this weekend, and my third kid, I was dropping him off, Seamus, and he grew up there when he was little, but to reacquaint himself to it, and he was asking some of those very naive questions, like, how long will it take? And you just smile. You say,
yeah, you don't want to know.
Right.
Well, I'm glad we can chat and squeeze in this little Rev Thoughts opportunity, because you said something earlier today when you and I were chatting about this mindset that I thought was really cool. And I'm trying to think of how you expressed it. It was sort of the idea of, is greatness something that you actually achieve, like an outcome or result, or is it a mindset? Does that sort of put my finger on the point that you were making?
Well, that's a good question, regardless when I was making.
Right.
Because, like greatness in of itself, what do they say? Greatness is thrust upon you, right? So I don't know if you can necessarily set out to be great. I think things are great based on a body of work, or, the integrity of decisions, probably discipline in the process, even giving things up, knowing what to walk away from and sticking with something, mm-hmm. regardless if anyone else believes you. And that's, being in New York City, what's so interesting is that all these art museums, I'm always curious on how, these artists are the ones that stand out.
Right.
And how history has chosen certain artists, no matter what museum you're in. When a Picasso is in that museum, it's a art of notoriety. And it's interesting. And then to study any of his life, and I've only done a little, but to recognize how often he was willing to start over or to experiment, to think there was something else, something better, I guess, and not just the status quo. So there is someone of just discipline and drive and desire, and he became great. I don't know if he was always great or even a
right.
great person.
Well,
I'm not even sure he was.
Well, we were talking about this. Let's put one little example out there. That's a common narrative that we hear from studio and agency owners, and even maybe from some production companies. And it goes something like this. Yeah. My little company, we're doing good and we're making progress, but we're not Buck. Now, of course,
right.
I just use the term Buck because Buck is this darling in our industry that's been wildly successful. They do beautiful work, obviously at the top of their game, and God bless them for that, right? We obviously celebrate everything that they've accomplished. But it's almost like there's this mindset that's revealed by that owner that says, well, yeah, if everything went my way, if everything was grand, then my life, my business would be like that. But obviously that's not going to happen because I'm not Buck. And then there's this resignation or something. And I'm wondering, what is that?
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Because there are certain companies, and let's say the reputation of those companies, I don't know, like they create a measuring stick for other businesses to know what they want to achieve or to give inspiration for direction. And we've heard that from some of the podcasts that you've done. It feels like many of the business owners will talk about another company that inspired them to get them started. And then we'll say some of the great ones that you've interviewed, you can tell when they stepped away. So they were inspired by another great company, but in order for them to become great, they had to step away. They had to do something different. And it's interesting, isn't it, how we want to, or we get in this industry to stand out and to be part of something, but to just go along with someone else's business or someone else's direction, you know when you're a copycat and when you have to do something different in order to stand out as an individual company or an individual artist.
Yeah. Well, I'm reminded, was it just last week when I remember I had Marcel from State in Confab, our weekly forum. And he was so great telling the story of how State Designs made this transition from, yeah, everyone was calling us and saying, can you do this project like Buck? And he said, I got to a place where I said, just call Buck. But that meant, yeah. And of course, that's why we love Marcel, right? But I know we shared this clip, I think, in Seven Ingredients, and a bunch of people were high-fiving and saying amen and all that. Because there was a point in his journey when Marcel said, hey, I have a voice, I have a point of view, and I'm going to go for it. And I don't have to continue, I don't know, making excuses or resigning myself to something lesser. And that took time. It took intention. It took follow through and courage and all that. But obviously, they're now reaping the benefits of making those investments.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, Joel, is like just between the two of us. So you took a path of being that individual that started a business to set themselves apart early on. And at the same time you were doing that, I was a person working for companies. So I wasn't really the decision maker if the company was going to be great or not. I really just got a job and was happy to have a job and did whatever work there was at the moment, right? That's how I chose to get started in the business. In my past, you know, my first job was the American Music Awards and then the Oscars and then RGA, which we did the title sequence for Seven. That became Imaginary Forces. A very small group of us got that started. And then when I left Imaginary Forces, I went to Ewan Company, I went to Trailer Park, and then Rev Think. So like the path I was in was this Hollywood-based kind of front-end growing businesses. And each one I went to would double in size in the time I was there. So each of them had some growth and some notoriety to separate them at that time.
I hear that list and I'm like, yeah, when are you going to finally work somewhere that someplace somebody's heard of?
Yeah, right. I know, it's such a boring career. But what's funny is that I think I recognize more as you leave a place from the outside, looking in, it's perceived as one way. But from the inside, I would agree that I think the stuff we did at Imaginary Forces was great. I think it was a great company. There was great people. Nobody was afraid of working extra hours or doing something else because it was very rewarding on all levels. But it's not like we started one day and say, oh, cool, we're going to be great and it's there. We just did work. But something happened in the energy of the company that we knew we were onto something and we could repeat it over and over and over again. In your case, you are a business owner of 20 years, which has its own kind of bubble of success, huge achievements, plenty of revenue, legacy of employees, but it's not one that everyone heard of and was being called on. But you would say, well, you had some greatness also, regardless if anyone ever heard the name Impossible.
Yeah, I think, and it's interesting because in the years that I was running that studio, if people had said, is Impossible Pictures great? I think out of deference and respect for the people in the industry that I thought were truly great, I would say, no, we're really good, but we're going to be great. Like we're getting there. I heard an interesting nuance in something you just said back there a second ago, because I've been asking this question in preparation for the dinner we're doing here next week in LA for Cohort. And it's this question of, is greatness a goal or is it a byproduct? And because I heard actually this sermon recently that was really cool, where this guy made this point and he said that the do flows from the who. So in other words, it's not a goal that of doing, we're going to do great work. That rather the better goal is we are going to be a great company. Like it's the who are you becoming? And once you become clear about that, then the rest starts to happen. And I almost get that sense that that's part of the magic that happened at Imaginary Forces, was there were great people saying, we aspire to do great things together and be great people and be a great company. And then out of that flowed great work. But you, I don't know. I'm just asking, is that, does that describe what was happening?
It is funny. It's like, it's a who, but it's definitely a belief system, because in my mind, as you're talking, I'm thinking about all the different combinations of people I worked with. It was never always the same team and the same group hitting the achievements. Right. We had different creative directors, different producers, different editors, different artists. We had kids coming out of Design Center. We had people that had came out of Yale 20 years prior. You know, all this variety of background and experience. But there was almost a belief that we were going, that we were doing something. We loved what we did, right? That we're going to do something great. And we weren't afraid of asking questions. So you know me, like one of the things I ask the most is the question, why? And I felt like Imaginary Forces at the time kept asking the question, why? Why would it look this way? Why would we produce it? Where does the why come from? And when you drag that out of a story or a movie or even a logo for a company, to know why it should look this way, and then to not let go until it does exactly what it's supposed to do. I feel like that's like was a shared belief. And now we work with many, many production companies, and there's magic inside of each of them. And some struggle with that belief. They can have some financial success, but struggle with that belief. And others, they're small, but are achieving great things. And it doesn't matter the size or the finances, but they're pushing beyond the current limits or being known for a certain personality, setting a new edge. And it's very exciting to be around them regardless of what the world might know of them yet at this point.
And I love the idea that they, you get to define what is greatness for you. Because you're right, there's some creative entrepreneurs that we work with. Like I'm thinking of my friend Maria, who said, for me, greatness is having myself and one employee, everyone else is freelance, and I do really good work and have a great lifestyle called I take 2 months off each year and travel the world. And some other owners would say, that's not great, but to her, that is great. And that's a very satisfying why for her that drives her.
Yeah, I might argue with you that I'm not really sure the people that are doing great work are satisfied.
Right. Yeah, I mean, very often
the lack of satisfaction is what making them achieve it.
Well, that, and I mean, there's an interesting question there. Is it that never being satisfied that drives, it's almost a manic or an insanity that drives you to create greatness? It's that pursuit of greatness that actually enables you to achieve it, even though you believe you've never achieved it. which is sad, because obviously that could be a very unsatisfying life. But yeah, I think you're right. There are some companies that are stuck in that. What's the encouragement to those people that might be great, but don't feel like they can celebrate it or embrace it or admit it?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it'd be hard to have a topic like this and not recognize Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, and recognizing what those companies did differently that excelled them beyond the current common, the common understanding or the common sense of achievement. So what makes Apple step out from all the competition when the time came down to it? And it wasn't Apple by itself. It was something that Steve Jobs specifically did when he was involved. There's that key person or key people. And I think first of all, they know that they are winners, that they can do it and they're not gonna let go until they can. And then there are people that are engaged with them that also want that same kind of achievement. So, you know, first I think it starts with someone. It doesn't even have to be the primary leaders, but somebody in the organization has to first kind of step up, start talking up the fact that it can be done and we are they and magic will happen. I think of Justin Barnes, the interview you did recently with him from Versus, and his sense of attitude of he knew he was going to win. Like, that's it. And lo and behold, he is. I mean, he's doing wonderful in the process.
Well, I'm thinking back to when I, in my years as an owner, I had this, maybe it's foolish naivete early on. And it expressed itself this way, that, gosh, yes, there are companies out there. Buck didn't exist at the time, but in my day, it was, say, Novocom or Telezign or Pittard Sullivan, right? And what I told myself was, well, until somebody says, no, you can't do that, I'm going to play at that level, even though at the time I was not nowhere near that level. But that attitude of, I think I can be great, and I'm willing to put myself out there and try and get that meeting, try and connect with that person, try and solve that problem, develop that expertise. And until somebody says, no, Joel, you suck, go away, I'm just going to keep showing up. And there was some sort of a magic in that, because I think if you fast forward 10 or 20 years later, a lot of people would say, well, that was sort of the difference maker, is that you just believed, I'm going to win. And until someone tells me, no, you're a loser, and please stop showing up or stop bothering us, I was going to keep at it. And it worked.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said in that. I think there's another thing I recognize, and this might come from another Jim Collins book, the Built to Last one, is that great organizations push people out that don't belong. So in sense of belief, there's also a sense of belonging. And I can tell you lots of stories of people that had gone through many of the companies I worked for, and they just couldn't make it. I'll even say this, even with the companies that we consult, we've learned among the five of us at RevThink, that when we start down a certain client, we can recognize, oh, this one's not for me. This is for you, Joel. Because there are certain things of personality types we recognize, I'll click, you'll click, Jason will click. And we know that when you hear it and there's a certain kind of push, you go, oh, that's, we know who should get involved in that standard. So I think there's something, a reality of that within that system, organization, it actually pushes people out. But I almost feel like people have a responsibility in that if you're working for a great company and you're doing great things and somebody inside the company doesn't believe it, convert them or, have them realize that they don't belong. That doesn't start creating like the seed of discontent and populating the business and doing harm.
Well, maybe this is that. I'm thinking of that concept in Good to Great when Jim Collins talks about get the wrong people off the bus, get the right people on the bus, and then figure out where the bus is going. But that you have to be willing to let go of this myth of greatness, and that is, oh, we're always growing, we're always getting bigger. Because sometimes the right move is, oh, I need to actually let these people move on, take a step back, retreat, shrink, regroup in order to move forward and be great. In a deeper, truer sense.
Yeah,
that's hard for owners. That's really hard for owners to embrace that, because there's this thing, gosh, anytime I have to let somebody go, it just feels like failure, even though it's a pruning. It's like we're going to let this tree grow better, stronger, healthier, but it requires some trimming and some cutting, and that's painful.
Absolutely. Imaginary Forces, we almost seasonally had cutbacks, and it was like pruning. It hurt. There was people that I didn't want to have let go, that I was responsible for and had to let go. As a matter of fact, that was kind of the final tipping point for me. And when I decided it's time for me to go, was then at a point in time where I had the relationship with the company, and one of these pruning seasons came along. I felt like it was very pointed towards me and the decisions I was making and the people I was working with. And I thought to myself, I think I'm done. I think I've rebuilt this thing five or six times already. I don't know if I'm up for another round of it. And, you know, the company kept going. It was doing as an organization, as a business. Those leaders could retain the momentum they needed to, even though ownership changes, even account changes, and still can achieve greatness. So there's something beyond those small key factors that we think of as sometimes big, like a certain client or a certain person, or even location. So one more thing, or maybe one last thing I've kind of recognized around greatness is it's often great companies start from and have some anchor of a few great accounts. So there's something that they contributed to their client that makes them great. So it's not just having the top artist, but it's what they did for others. That other peopleness, I talk about it a lot in the four stages of a creative career, but it's also true of a company. The other peopleness is what employees did you bring on and how did they grow within your business? And when they leave, what legacy are you putting out there as they walk away? And clients as well. They like these major accounts are often things that set people apart. The example that comes to my head, and maybe it's a little bit lame because it's so obvious, but something like if you had a company today and you got an account at Apple, you would think you achieved something because you are now qualified to work with one of the top corporations of the world. In reality, you're just riding the coattails of a Shia Day that did that many, many years ago. So the real great company was Shia Day or Wieden Kennedy with Nike. Those are the companies that made the brand. And now to work with Nike today would be really fun, but Wieden Kennedy did that. So I think in our own journey to recognize when the time comes to step up and to make your own moment. David Fincher was an outstanding director. He wasn't as well known when we did the title sequence for Seven with him. He wasn't as well known as Robert Redford or Spielberg or Clint Eastwood or those other companies, other directors we were working with. But clearly when the contribution was right and the chemistry was there and we made the title sequence for Seven, it propelled David's career and Imaginary Forces and Kyle Cooper. Many careers were made from that one kind of key moment.
Yeah, it's always nice. It's refreshing to hear the perspective of the day when Fincher was not all that. And it's like, oh, and I guess that's true of Spielberg. And I guess it's true of Lucas. And like all greatness at one point was not. And then something happened and something came about. And now we all point to it and say, ah, there it is. But clearly it wasn't there. And then it was.
Yeah. And I think that obsession to want something better. So maybe even to wrap it up, you know, my encouragement would be from just being a witness to many companies, to the many that we are. And we know many now all over the world that it's awesome to have these engagements and to know these business owners. The conversations we have at Cohort, sometimes I look around the table and I think, Joel, we are the luckiest people in the world because we have
For sure.
some of the greatest minds in this industry processing forward what changes or what opportunities they're looking for, what issues they have and possible solutions for them. It's pretty great to be in the room where that happens. But I think anybody who's listening to this podcast that has a desire to be great, that is the answer. Simple desire and then doing it and knowing that you are, therefore you will be. And that, you know, that amazing saying that we have that the best way to deal with the future is to create it. You can almost say the best way to be great is to create it. And that push and desire will get you there every time.
I love that. And I love that you put it that way, that simply, that give people permission to desire. Because that's a beautiful, powerful thing. And follow it, because it will take you to places of greatness. So thank you for saying that.
Of course. Yeah, desire and curiosity. Nothing beats those two key elements inside of us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I hope this podcast was great.
Well said. Well, the desire's there and certainly the curiosity.
Right.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.